what you're trying to get this to do is not what Doritos are going to do, but.
It did it to me.
Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and as always, I'm joined by the, I don't know, Danielle. It's kidding season. You're it, Danielle Caroli.
Hello, John. How are you?
Like many people in the goat industry right now, tired. But I'm okay. I'm dealing. We're in a little bit of a lull right now with goats kidding, so it's fine. We're fine. Everything's fine, as you say. How are you?
I'm fine. Everything's fine. No, we had, and I think we'll talk about it a little later, but we had another doe kid today, so all went well with that. And my big excitement is on St. Patrick's Day, I decided it was time to introduce my kids to the bar.
The, like the town bar or?
The milk bar.
And the one that everybody hates on Facebook? Okay,
go the on. One that everybody hates that I absolutely love. They are now drinking on the bar. It has been how many feedings? Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's been 7 feedings since we fed a bottle. Life is beautiful.
I have questions.
All right. I may have answers.
Okay. So for those that don't know, I believe it was Laura Hughes made a post. It was like, what land bars do people like, or do people like this land bar? And it's the pink land bar that you use.
It's the pink I think it's Coburn is the brand milk bar. And
so well, I was just going to say, so she made that post and everybody was like, that thing effing sucks. And I was like, Danielle Caroli uses it. And you're like giving this glowing review that you've used it forever.
Oh, yes.
Success.
I'm going on probably 7 or 8, if not 10 plus years of using
it. I was
going to
say longer than that because I have 2 that I have not used from my cousin Caitlin. And she was like, yeah, Danielle uses these too. She loves them. But she got her own like self-feeding system for the kids, right? So she didn't need it anymore. Them anymore.
Right.
So, yeah. And that was 7 or 8 years ago now. So
no,
yeah,
I have a picture and I'm trying to think of when these kids would have been born that are on this land bar. And I think it was maybe even, well, hold on. I mean, it's not worth looking, but I've been using it for years. Long story short, I've been using it for years.
For a long time. My question is,
how?
Well, how are you seeing such success with this when everybody in those comments was like, this thing sucks, it leaks, the nipples are expensive, which they probably are expensive, but, you know, whatever. But they're terrible, the kids chew them, they leak, they're bad, blah, blah, blah. So how are you seeing success with this?
So I will acknowledge that the nipples are expensive and they do not last. Typically, I figure I get a season out of them.
Okay. Well, some people were saying, like, making it sound like that they don't even last that long. So that's
so, like,
interesting. Okay.
When I say I get a season out of them, I feel like typically the first 2 and the like center nipples will start to leak towards the end of my season.
Okay.
Typically at that time, my kids are, and I typically then I'll just kind of watch them and decide how long into or how much longer we're going to be feeding babies and watch it and make sure it's not leaking that much, but kind of go and judge it from there. So I typically replace all the nipples. Like I at the end of the year, I typically, and I didn't do it this year, and I do have two I have to replace, but I still have eight that are doing pretty well, and I'll replace the two. I keep calling that my tomorrow project. It's working for now. So I typically replace the whole round of nipples. You do have to kind of like use soap and water to and a pair of pliers to get them all lined up. And you do want to make sure that the slit is correctly lined up because that is the key, part of the key to the success of using the bar. And then I feed, usually I feed outside of the pen. The past, I think, 2 years, I've fed inside. It kind of depends on the setup and how many goats and everything like that. But I like to put a boot tray underneath the bar because it does leak a little bit. But what I do is that boot tray catches that dripped milk, and pretty much as soon as you put kids on, there's no more leaking because they magically like suck the nipples and you don't have to worry about it. But I do put have a boot tray so that this way I'm not having any leaking going into the pen and causing like that gross milk to spill. And I do not self-feed my kids and so that they or
You mean free feed?
for yes, kidding season. So they only get fed when I'm there. And so then I put them on the bar. It's like the learning curve is so much better than the buckets. I mean, my kids were 2 weeks old, which is a little later than what I typically like to get them on the bar, but I was like, oh, only four bottles, no big deal. But then I had the next round of kids coming and decided for my sanity, I was going to take the time while I didn't have the next round of kids to teach these babies how to drink on the bar. And like I said, we haven't fed a single bottle since. I kind of put them on. I have a seat right next to them, and I do put their mouths back on because they haven't quite figured that part out yet. But once they are on the nipple, the milk is right there and it's pouring. Or it's not pouring, but like it's flowing. That's the right word. Again, kidding season people, please be kind. But it comes out, so they're drinking, and then I just monitor tummies and make sure tummies are full and we're good. Then the other thing I do is I always, because I am not free feeding, I always pull it out right afterwards and I hose it down. I make sure I drain the milk out of the nipples by kind of tilting it back, rinsing it out, tilting it back again. I use a hose and just spray it down, spray the outside of it too. And then I will go and clean it with soap and water frequently as well. But every time after every use, I am rinsing it out and cleaning it. But it takes probably all of 5 seconds to rinse it out and give it a nice clean. Maybe I'll give you 30 seconds to a minute if we're actually timing it. But it works really well for me. For a while, I didn't have an actual sink to even think about cleaning tubes from that other but like the other typical land bar that everybody used. And so this was kind of more or less the only option that would really work well to have a clean system because I could just spray it with a hose. And I just really like it. I mean, I know I'm probably the unicorn in this, but
You were.
I don't know if it's just that I was coming from a place initially like that the buckets just were not like the tube fed buckets were not an option. I just did not have a sink to clean that with. And so kind of had to make this work. And then in the process realized that I don't like the little bit of leaking it does. So, got a plastic boot tray that I hose off as well, or have a dog that loves to kind of clean it off for me. But that captures the little bit of milk that spills. And I don't let anybody really play with it. The babies are on to drink and then they're done. They're not, it's not sitting in a pen all day with them. Do the, and like, and I'm the first to admit, do the nipples last? Absolutely not. When I can have a clean bucket within 5 minutes and not have to worry about it all, and just can kind of feed kids really quick, they drink, I pull it out, they're good to go, and I'm good to go. It's a huge time saver for me. It really works well for me, and I can kind of keep it as clean as I want it to be without really stressing about it.
Okay, well, glowing review. Appreciate that. I think maybe sometimes there's a little bit of human error, and a lot of people were saying like, "Oh, well, I can't keep it in there all day, or else they'll chew on the nipples and ruin them." Like, so yeah, for maybe free feeding, not a great one. But I mean, I have two of them, folks, and I've never used them, but I
Well, you've
might
also
someday.
never non-bottle fed your kids, so.
It's true. It's going to change this year. It's got to change this year. I can't. I'm like dreading bottle feeding six kids, right? Last year it was bearable because I had like one kid born, but we'll see how I feel after Thea has her giant single,
You got a few days.
I do. I've got until April. Those kids will be moved up into the barn. I was going to move them up. This is my current dilemma, is I was going to move my kids up to the barn. But it's gonna be like 20 degrees at night this whole week. So I'm like, no. And I am one of those people, I refuse to put a heat lamp in my barn. Just not gonna do it. Like down here in the house, I've got cameras. I mean, I've got cameras in my barn too, but I've got cameras. And like, it's just like, I feel like there's nothing that's gonna happen. There's too many things that could happen up at the barn. And I'm not right there, right? Yeah, I'm gonna have to build them with the big kid panels, a little pen in the basement until the nighttime temperatures get okay. During the day, they'll go up into the barn, but at night, they're going to have to come back down.
So, I'll be honest with you. I have a heat lamp in my kid pen. I think that heat lamp is 100% for me. And
Because like it's doing nothing.
they don't use it. The only thing they do with it is check it out to see what's going on and like try and reach it. So I have a castle in my kid pen. And
King's Rock.
King's Rock, we have the castle,
Yeah,
obviously.
we have the meats.
So, but it's one of those toddler, outdoor, awesome kids' toys that I found on the side of the road 1 year. But it has kind of this under area where there's like a slide and a little bridge, and then under, and then a platform, and under it, that's where they sleep. And they just kind of huddle up in there. And I put the heat lamp on. And I mean, the heat lamp is still on for them. Nobody's used it. I kind of put a little, I was worried about how close was the heat to this. So it didn't really do much. But I did put a bale of straw close to it, not really, really close to it, but figuring like maybe they needed a little bit of security to lie down with it. They didn't really care. And I mean, it's been warm some days, it's been cold the other days. And I was comfortable putting the babies out. I mean, my newborn babies are in my tack room right now, and they'll probably wait a few days. But once they're 2 or 3 days old, I feel comfortable because I kind of think, well, if you're really cold, you can lie under the heat lamp. But I think they kind of keep warm enough together that we're okay. But granted, there's only four babies. There will only be seven babies, so they're not really going to smush each other. You know, there's all these other
Yeah.
fun things that we could dive into, and there's always the what ifs. But,
Yeah. I just, they're like a week old, some of them. So I'm just like, eh, well,
I'm the heartless one. Go out in the big barn. Get out of there.
Well, I was gonna throw them out there today, but it was just kind of, it was pretty cold. And it's not like it's super cold in the barn, but I don't know. This is the only time I actually baby my goats, I guess. Last or this morning when I went down to feed the kids, Whisper's kid, who Danielle knows and now everybody's gonna know, is the most troublesome thing ever. Her name's Anthem, and she's just a troublemaker. She was outside of the playpen, just sleeping. So I was like, okay, this is great. You've learned how to jump over. So I think it was an accident, though. She got the zoomies after eating or something and kind of went over, and she was like, oh no, because she hasn't tried it since, but you never know. Danielle, we've got a little bit to cover before we continue with like our own news. Do we want to do some ag news, and then we'll kind of continue with the update of what's going on in our lives?
Yes, go for it, John.
Okay. So first off, guys, we were going to have Dr. Kurt Schnipke on today to talk about some fun stuff, but kidding season is kidding season, and he has three does that are kidding right now. And so far, I'm told he's getting lots of does, so that's great. Congratulations. I wouldn't say lots, but he's getting does, right? Right parts. So congratulations, Dr. Schnipke. We will be joined by him with him for next week's episode. So look forward to that. Also, in some more news in dairy goat world, specifically Ohio, on March 14th, a devastating storm ripped through Ohio, and the Mann family of Wildhoof Acres had a devastating loss. The tornado that hit their farm leveled their barn, where the majority of their registered dairy goats and registered sheep were housed, along with their supply of feed and hay and other necessary equipment for routine management of their herd. A large group of mature does, including Hope's heart goat, Jeannie. And if you guys don't know who Hope is a youth within ADCA who has a nice little herd of Oberhasli, and Jeannie is definitely her heart goat. She's lost some 2024 lambs in the destruction. So they're cleaning it up. I've seen pictures of the barn. It's not pretty. It's a total loss, folks. So there's a GoFundMe that's been set up, and we're going to add it to the show notes for this. We'll also add the link to the Facebook post for this episode. And they've reached a goal of $10,000, so they've hit over $10,000. But obviously, that's not going to replace a barn, right? And obviously, they probably have insurance for this kind of thing. But the more that we as dairy goat people can do to help this youth and this family who's been through a ton is definitely worth it. I'm really proud of how the dairy goat community has stepped up and raised $10,220 as of this recording. So now the new goal is set at 15,000, and we'll see if we can hit that and go forward. So if I know that times are tough for everybody, but if you have just a little bit to spare, and you feel that it's a good cause, please do help out. And again, we're going to have that in the show notes and on the post. And Hope, I don't know if you're listening, but I just want you to know that we feel for you. We can't imagine what you're going through. Keep your head up as best you can. I can't, like I said, can't even imagine, but we're here for you. So that's about all we can really offer at this point. But I know people have been helping out the best they can, helping place some animals for the family so that way they don't have to worry about that, helping bring some feed. So it's really cool how everybody's pulled together.
No, exactly. And it is definitely the, I don't want to say, I guess maybe bittersweet is the right word, but it does warm your heart when you see the community step up like they have and be here for one of its members. And we see this time in and time out again. And yeah, but well said what you said. And again, it's, we're just sorry for their loss and cannot even imagine it. And so, just wanted to make sure that I know it's shared multiple places, but if we could just share it and bring it to light and maybe help in whatever way we can and use our voice for that, we might as well. So we just wanted to mention it before we moved on to other news.
Moving on, other ADCA news. There's April 1st, the ADGA scholarships are due. So youth, if you're looking to get a scholarship through ADGA, definitely go on the site and fill out that, and hopefully you'll be chosen for a scholarship. Last bit of news, Danielle, I think you'll find this quite interesting. Folks, we have the final six names to pick from for Danielle's kid named by yours truly.
I'm so glad you've gotten it down to six names. First of all, I'm very impressed that you came up with six names. I'm not going to lie. Even though I know as I'm looking at this list that you've had a little bit of help, just a little bit. But I'm very impressed that somehow you managed to find six names. But continue.
Okay. So, first one, Kings Rock, swipe right. And for those dating impaired people like myself who have been married longer than these dating apps have been around, swipe right is something you do on Tinder? Do you swipe right for good or bad, Danielle?
I think it's good.
Okay, so swipe right means good. Like, you want to be matched with that person.
Yes.
So Kings Rock, swipe right. Kings Rock, running on Duncan. I mean, it's just a classic. It's a throwback to Danielle's coffee addiction.
Okay.
Slight what? It's like, is that... And by the way, if there's a do better on here, you got to tell me, okay?
Well, I need... There's... I'm not using a do better until you narrow down from the six to what I'm what I'm actually working with here.
Okay. Well, these are names you are working with. Okay. So, and basically by how the listenership reacts to these names, and maybe comment, folks, on the post, which name you like the best. We'll go from there, and I'll consider it. It's not going to be a hey, this one won. Because there was so many people that liked it. Okay, I get to choose. All right, just letting you know. But your opinion matters to me. So many people reached out to me. Am I unapproachable, Danielle?
The tides turned, John.
Have the tides turned? Am I now the unapproachable one?
No, the problem is nobody believed this would ever happen, so they didn't put an iota of thought into coming up with a name for my goat. So... we will just go with that this year.
Yeah, I know that y'all listened to this because I saw the number of downloads our last episode got. Okay. It's a popular episode. So do better, listenership. Continuing on. Kings Rock, I'm Knuff. And that's a throwback to Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of I'm Enough, I'm Knuff. All right. That's one of my personal favorites. I came up with that, a.k.a. Kings Rock, My Roman Empire. I also came up with that, I believe.
Okay.
I think that's great because Roman knows Roman Empire, but also My Roman Empire, it's like the thing that it's a TikTok thing. There was a trend, like, how often do you listen to, or how often do you think about the Roman Empire?
Exactly.
And these women were asking their significant others, and the guys were like, all the time. By the way, none of them were. Like, please. We're thinking about Ninja Turtles, okay?
It's not worth having this conversation on the podcast, but okay. You're wrong. Moving on.
We'll table it. All right. So anyway, that's why. How often do you think about Roman Empire? Daniel's Roman Empire is thinking about how often or how I won this contest.
Okay.
Okay. Kings Rock, Red Flag. Self-explanatory. Pretty good one. And then I just thought of this one. Pretty good. You can leave the KRTC out, but Kings Rock KRTC, who is Kings Rock Time Confit. Is that how you say your name?
No.
Confit?
Yeah, well, it's Kings Rock Nighttime Confit, but...
Oh, Nighttime. I didn't know it was Nighttime. Okay, so we're just going to just... That's terrible. I'm taking all that out. So instead of KRTC, it's just Kings Rock Zoned Out because the The sire is in the zone. So this one's zoned out.
Zoned out. All right.
That's pretty freaking good.
It is right? A good one.
You might want to use that. I just if we don't use this for the contest, feel free, Danielle.
Well, I really liked, and the irony of it all is that I've been working with this herd name for many years and come up with many names. And by the way, I don't think you're giving the listenership enough credit, because a lot of people, maybe they didn't send you messages directly, but they all shared some fabulous suggestions.
Where?
On social media for names.
Well, on what social media?
On Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, please. That's
there was a my favorite was Game Ober. I really like that one.
Can that was a good one, but I didn't know. Did you want me to play with the Oberhasley thing?
No, I'm just saying I just appreciated it. I'm just saying that you're not giving the listenership enough credit, because they did contribute. So anyway, I really like, somebody suggested something about and playing on the idea of like rock. And I think now I'm going to have a King's Rock, Paper, Scissors. if I can fit in, shoot, like King's Rock, Paper, Scissors, shoot. I don't know if I have enough spaces. I haven't like sat down to figure that out. But I just thought it was funny, and I've never used rock as part of the name, but it's kind of like opened up my eyes to what the possibilities could be with that. So there may be a King's Rock, Paper, Scissors or something like that out there in the next couple of years. So it was just a fun new discovery for how to play with my herd name. So I think you need to decide. Obviously, you can let the listeners weigh in. But I think you need to decide which of these names you are saying is your, like, start. And then I can decide whether or not we are going to have to add a little pizzazz to it or not. Boy. And if I'm going to have to do a do better veto.
So I was really leaning towards I'm Kenuff, because in the moment I was like, this is hilarious. And Grace Toy would agree. But honestly, that's not my Roman Empire.
You're going My Roman Empire?
I like My Roman Empire, and I like Swipe Right. Those are my two front runners right now.
Okay.
I do like Zoned Out too, but...
What?
I like Zoned Out too, but I think Final Answer, Roman Empire, Swipe Right, those are the ones I'm leaning towards. Not official, but... If it was one of those two, Danielle, is there a do better in there?
I'd have to think on it on that one. I have to say both of them are very fun.
Were you going to veto I'm Kenuff? Were you going to?
No. I personally think like Swipe Right is an awesome name. I would really like to use it on a buck. Versus a doe. That's my, and the same with Red Flag. We actually were joking around in the barn that we were gonna name a buck Red Flag. So it's funny that you added that to your list, but I just think Swipe Right is a good buck name, and this is a doe bet.
This is a doe bet. We are, and I just say dibs on the blonde doe? I haven't even seen her, but I guarantee you that it's like one of my favorite colors of a Nubian that you had born today.
Well, if she's the one I'm keeping out of the two does, then yes, that would be the kid you're naming. And most likely she will be, but yeah.
Yeah. I think my Roman Empire is like, it fits so well with that Roman nose, you know?
It does. Okay. I think we could work with that. Does it fit space wise?
I'll count right now as you fill airtime 2-4.
Because I'm just trying to decide if like I want you to like
26.
Expand. It's 26.
Yeah.
So you have another couple of letters you can use.
What would I expand to?
I don't know. I don't know. I almost just want to, like, use my do better my do better veto just to like do it. But it
Ooh.
is a pretty good one. It is a pretty good one.
Ooh,
So
first veto. Okay. All
no,
right,
no,
I'm
no,
putting
no,
an
no, no, no.
asterisk.
I don't know if I'm using it or not.
Okay, I'm just putting an asterisk just for now.
Yeah. So it's a good start. Well, let's iron this out and we'll
We are
think.
no further. I just have to have her have a name figured out so that you can at least get it registered and have at least a stamp duplicate for nationals. Got it.
Yeah, oh no, it she'll get registered. I just want to like I want to sit on the name and I do like the name, but I just want to make sure like I want this name to be epic and I just want to make sure it's not like should it be She's My Roman Empire? I don't know if we could fit that, but I also she this one doesn't fit in my she's line anyway. So but like should there be something should it be like Your Roman Empire? I don't know why I'm contributing to this name,
Yeah,
but
this is really ridiculous. Listen, you're lucky you get a veto, all right?
but
Like
we'll
you haven't
iron
contributed behind the
it. All right, so we'll figure out. I do. Am I supposed to like the name? Because I do like the name.
It's a bonus. I
It's
don't
a
like it's not
bonus.
this isn't first of all, I'm super glad that I won and not you, because you would have been like John Socks. Oh, Hilaire Farm John Socks. Like, because you're like, I don't feel like this is mean enough. You and Grace Toy. Grace Toy's like, you're going super easy on Danielle. These names are too easy. That's how Grace talks, by the way. Next time she's on the podcast, you'll hear it, folks. You'll hear it. All right, well, okay, we'll table this for now. Folks, let us know what you think. Daniel, what are we talking about today? Because obviously, kidding season happened. Dr. Kurt Schnipke is busy kidding out goats, having fun probably with all these first freshmen he's got going today. So what are we talking about to punt? To earn, not punt, call an audible.
So basically, we're going to break down some of our kidding stories from this year because I don't know about you, but no matter how many years I've been doing this, I always am looking for ways to improve or learning and trying to always do better. And not even that there's a measure of success in kid mortality rates or how successful you are at having safe, healthy kiddings. But the ultimate goal is what can you take from your kidding experiences and how can you use that to help your herd going forward? And is it giving you ideas or creative solutions to combat the next problem that you have? Or how can we learn and just, I guess, ultimately be more comfortable expecting the unexpected? And so we figured as we were kind of trying to make sure we had a good, strong topic today, we were just going to talk through some of the things that we've dealt with this year and whether it's to just give a voice to issues that commonly happen in the industry, or if it's to help inspire you on a different approach, or to just think slightly differently about different ways kidding is happening and how you're handling this time of year. We figured it's a worthwhile subject. And so we're just going to go through a few things that have happened so far for us. I mean, John has only two more does due. I'm halfway through my kidding season now, but even that, with that, it's been quite an adventure. So we'll kind of take you on some, we'll go through some stories, figure out what we're doing. And like I said, maybe it won't change anything or there's not going to be any life-altering stories, but maybe something we say will make you more comfortable with doing something differently in your operation or cause you to pause and think and adjust things. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, John, but I'm already making changes for the remainder of my kidding season. So, and how I'm approaching things. So,
I've got some changes that are being made. Yeah, I'm there with you. I've had some things pop up, but we'll talk about them. Yeah, for sure.
I started out and was very shocked, but I induced the first four does to kid of my kidding season. Two of those does were planned because I wanted to make sure that they were born before I left for a quick trip to Texas. And two of them were not planned. And the two that were not planned were does that were overdue and very. I don't even really remember the last time I've really had to induce a doe that was overdue. I will say I do not let my does go over 155 days. I have Nubians though, and also historically, with as I'm telling the story, it just kind of helps to put out there that my herd typically goes 150, 151, 152, 153 days. I occasionally will get a doe go early, but usually it's only early by a day or two. Nothing that crazy for the most part. I'm not even really focusing on them when they're at 145. It's only really once they hit that 150 that I'm really checking them out each day to decide if they're going to kid. I rarely get to animals that I have to do more than threaten inducing and seeing progress. But this year, that was not the case. And so the first doe I had kid, and I know I've talked a little bit about it on this podcast in previous episodes, but was my doe Rosie. Day 153 came around, which is when you would be inducing to make sure she kids by 155. And there was no udder development or very minimal udder development. Not enough that I was comfortable with saying, okay, she's going to go within 24 hours, or even that she was going to go within 48 hours. And I knew breeding dates. I double checked them. I wrote them down in various different places and kind of meticulously checked and made sure that they were correct. And knew that this kid ultimately needed to come out. And so I induced her and she ended up kidding early in the day on 155. That kid, I wish I got a weight on him, but he is big. She had him with minimal assistance for me. I was more or less the cheerleader on this one. She had him well. But if he was bigger, which ultimately kind of take a giant step back. But in the last trimester of pregnancy is when these babies gain all of their weight. And so the last couple of days of a doe's pregnancy is when these kids are just growing and growing and growing. And so adding a day or two is going to make a difference in terms of how much this kid weighs, but also how big that head is, how big are those shoulders, and are you going to run into difficulties? So we induced her, and I was really glad we did. Then the second doe we induced, because she was once again over 100 and she was close to 155 days, was a doe that we had AI'd. So again, I knew the date and I knew when she had been bred. I had watched her like a hawk, knew that it was on this day, and had ultrasounded her to confirm that this was the pregnancy, all of those fun things. She had no udder development. She was big. I mean, I thought she was having more than a single, but we've heard this story on this podcast several times at this point about that. But she was big, but there was no udder development. There was enough to know that she was starting to make milk, but it was kind of like, oh yeah, her teats are inflated a little bit. I mean, I was joking around with everybody because I saw more udder development on a doe that was due several weeks later than her. And so was watching, no progress, no progress. I mean, on this doe, even the ligaments weren't gone. She really wasn't dropped. And once again, I had to make that decision. Do I want to have this dough kid while I'm still thinking the kids are a decent size? Or do I want to see what happens, quote unquote, naturally and stress that dough out? Well, in hindsight, I was also feeding this dough, expecting her to be carrying multiples. And knowing that I had another dough previously that had a big kid and showed very similar signs, I elected to induce her and have her kid at 155 days because I once again was not wanting to really stress that dough out and have big kids. And it is something that I think people need to remember that, I mean, don't get me wrong, there definitely are consequences potentially when you're using luteinizing hormone to induce a pregnancy or to induce parturition, excuse me. But you have to weigh the consequences. And are you going to be dealing with a doe who is getting very stressed or not able to pass a kid because they're just too big? Or what are you dealing with? And so it's looking at those does, looking at the signs, and trying to figure out where to go with that.
Are you going to induce for earlier, like 45 and up, or what are your plans for next year for that, or as the season goes?
I am going to keep it playing by ear, but if they get to 153 and I'm not, so 153 days and I'm not confident that they're going to kid within the next 24 hours, they are going to get induced to kid at 155. I'm kind of sticking with this plan that nobody's going under 100 or over 155 days, because I think they will be able to handle kids at 155, but that extra day or two after 156, 157, waiting for their bodies to naturally have those kids, I just don't think it's worth the risk for
Yeah.
me and my herd. That, I mean,
Understandable.
I feel like there's alpines that are like, hold my beer, we're always going to kid at 157. Or you hear of these Tannenbergs, this doe was at 163 days and popped out a kid. But with my herd, that's what we're gonna do.
Okay. Yeah, I it's nightmare fuel if for me, if I have a job that is barely making an udder and is on day 153 for Oberhasli. That's like in my head, I'm like, that's a single buck and this buck's about to kill her. Cool. Like that's my nightmare fuel. So Godspeed with that. But also, Nubians, they have tend to have smaller kids, so you're fine.
I think it's different proportion versus smaller.
Oh yeah, well that's right.
And
Obies have the big blocky heads, and Nubians have that streamlined head when it's coming out.
okay.
I think. Am I wrong?
No, I really haven't done much with Oberhasli kids to say one way or another, or if it's just that.
Right. Should I go over one of mine, I guess?
Sure.
So my big one is there are some calcium issues on my farm. And I have a feeling it's probably from forage hay. I get second cut Orchard Timothy, and it's somewhat weedy. It's not bad. It's not like dusty crap, nasty stuff, but it's okay. It's good stuff. I've never had it tested. Shame on me, because we've had plenty of guests on here that talk about hay testing. We've had episodes pertaining to it. So you think I would, but I know that my guy, he cuts from many different fields. So like to be like, okay, I need stuff from the North End field is just not going to happen. So I think it's from forage, but that means that I got a supplement. And the reason why I think I have these calcium issues is Jen kitted, and she was induced. She kitted. She had her triplets. And then she She was like normal kidding. She was fine. We went up on the stand, milked her. She had enough colostrum for an induced doe. Generally, when you induce, you're not going to get a ton of colostrum out of your does. Enough to get by is what I say. And she didn't pass her placenta right away. And it was hanging. And I was like, okay, well, maybe it'll be gone by the morning. And guess what? In the morning, it wasn't gone. So then I had to run to the vet and get some oxytocin. And when I was talking to Melissa about this, she was like, Hollihan, Dr. Hollihan, by the way. She was like, she had triplets, John. You should probably give some calcium over the ribs and just, you know, that'll help. And I was like, it's fine, you know, whatever. So I give her some oxytocin. I tie a damp washcloth to the cleanings, and by the next day she was cleaned out. But guess what? She was feeling yucky. She had no milk because she got milk fever. Because I didn't listen to Dr. Hollihan. So then I went out and got some calcium gluconate and put a ton of calcium into this doe. And she, by 2 days later, she was back to normal-ish. She's still not bounced back great. She had triplets. She looks terrible for an 11-year-old doe that had... She looks great for an 11-year-old doe that had triplets, by the way. She just looks terrible if, like, we're like, oh, we're going to go to a show in 2 months. But yeah, so there's definitely a calcium issue because we had that with Jem. And then I want to say it was Opal. I'm pretty sure it was Opal. Had the same issue where she didn't pass her cleanings. So I gave her calcium, gave her oxytocin, she passed her cleanings. So I have issues with, I just need to fix. I got to kind of do some research on how I'm going to get that calcium into my does. And I'm sure it's through minerals of some sort. I just got to look it up and do the research and take the time. And, you know, there's that mineral panel that everybody's feeding their goats. It's like 12 mineral feeder thing. Have you seen that, Danielle?
Yes, I have.
I'm going to look into that and see what that's all about and, you know, offer that to the girls. But I also just think I'm going to have to spend the money and run a mineral panel on a couple of my does. I mean, I've got one that she looks like she's got a copper issue, but she doesn't. She's just a light doe that shouldn't really be this light. So minerals are weird this year. And I think it's probably just because it was a very wet year. So the minerals that were in the forage might be a little bit off, if that makes sense.
No, I completely agree. And through what we've seen, hay testing, obviously different fields, slightly different areas, but similar weather. We are having hay issues. The protein's not there. The quality isn't necessarily there. And so that can affect different things going forward with your animals. And I've learned over the years that, yes, calcium is not something that you administer willy-nilly. No. Because it can cause issues. And so you really want to talk to your vet to start the program and figure out how it all works. But you do not have to be afraid of giving calcium sub-Q. It's the calcium that everybody should be afraid of is giving the calcium IV. But when you're giving it sub-Q, you can give them calcium because it will be absorbed slowly and in the body slowly. So you can be, it's a little less scary to give calcium that way. And your vet will probably very quickly recommend giving that a little bit of calcium right after they kid, because they do know that giving them calcium sub-Q is not as deadly and scary as calcium gets the bad rap for.
Yeah, and so I had to call my vet to get oxytocin. And when I tell you how, I'll tell you why I was pissed off at Jem. But I called her and I was like, "Hey, this is what I got going on." She goes, "Oh, the first time I was like, I need oxytocin." She's like, "Okay, come get it." So instead of buying a bottle, I was like, "Oh." She's like, "How many do you need?" I was like, "You know what? I only need one, but how about you give me two doses? And that way, if I need it, perfect. And I'll have it." And she's like, "Okay." I'm like, "This has never been an issue. I've never had to use oxytocin before. I'll never have to use it again." Right? So I go to give Jem a shot. Well, Jem is a wench when it comes to giving shots. So it's just the worst, the absolute worst. The Nubian comes out. I mean, I swear her ears get 10 feet long. And she threw a fit, almost flipped the stand when I was going to give her a shot. And the first dose got just wasted. Didn't get in her. Like, just got wasted. Almost dead myself with it. That's how much she freaked out. So I got the second dose in her. And I was like, "Well, at least I got two. I'm so smart." And then Opal kidded. And she had the issue, and I called my vet, and I was like, "Hey," I was like, I think I'm gonna like, do I need to like go to Tractor Supply, or is this a vet thing now? Because I rarely ever give calcium." And I was like, "I need calcium because I've got a milk fever dough." I think I called her with Jen about this maybe when she got milk fever, and she's like, "No, you can go to Tractor Supply, still don't get it." I was like, "Oh, okay." So I went and got it. And then it happened with Opal where I needed more oxytocin. And she's like, "You can buy a bottle or I can write you a script." And I was like, "Well," I was like, "Write me the script, but I'm just going to come pick up some doses." So I picked up like six doses and they should be good for a little bit. But yeah.
Well,
Annoying.
and touching on that really quick, your retained placentas might be more the fact that these does are being induced, because that is a risk of, and it might just be the luck of the draw this year. Not to say that there isn't something else going on, but retained placentas are one of the risks of inducing does. And it's kind of like those, where are the risks? Where are, weighing the risks to decide what works best for you? That retained placenta might be because you are inducing your does, and it just so happened that you got two this year that were retained.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It could be the luck of the draw. I think I obviously have mineral issues though. When you look across the animals on my property right now, like it's just like it's that time of year where you're like, "Wow, you guys just got hit hard with this." And like, it's like when women have give birth and their hair turns white, right? It's like the same deal with these guys. It's like, "Oh wow, you guys look terrible right now," but.
Okay.
It's also, I'm sure you go through it too, Danielle. Your goat kids, they went from being huge monsters to tiny little things just trying to survive, and you're like, "Oh God, my herd looks terrible," right? Like you kind of go through that. The spring uglies before they look pretty for shows.
No, I get you. I definitely get you. As they're bouncing back and they're pulling themselves together.
Yeah, I mean, we've done episodes called Bouncing Back because it drives us that nuts. But what else do you have for your list, Danielle, of things?
So I was, well, I think so. I'm going to talk about just kind of, I think this is a beautiful kind of segue and different things to talk about is the other two does I induced this year. And I induced them to kid because I wanted them to have kids on the ground before I left. So they were planned inductions and purposely done. But they kidded at the same time, which was kind of planned. And it was a fun race of, all right, is this one going to kid or is this one going to kid? And watching them and realizing and just kind of assessing the situation as we were going. And luckily, because they both had more or less one kid, we we were able to get the one kid out, have the other kid delivered, check the other one because, as I've talked about on the podcast, I did not think she these dodes only had one kids in them each. But then, I guess technically the second doe did have more in her, but basically what happened was I had gone in and she wasn't progressing well enough that I was comfortable, and because she was induced, I recognized that it doesn't always completely work perfectly. Maybe she wasn't dilated enough. And so I went in and checked and pulled out the first kid. And then afterwards, I basically said, okay, this kid was very stressful on her. Let me go and see if there's anything else, because at this point, I've already gone in. Let me go and do a sweep. And so in that sweep, found a mummified kid, pulled that out, and was took care of that. And actually, what I did with this, because this was the third doe of the season, and you always get concerned, was I was inside the doe. I felt that this was a mummified kid. It was very tiny. You just knew. And so I made sure that this kid was caught when I pulled it out. I was, first of all, very careful as I was pulling it out that I wasn't breaking it into pieces. But the next part of it is I had it pulled out and I put it directly onto a wee wee pad. And then I wrapped it up and threw it in my freezer because mummified kids happen. That's just how it goes. But if it wasn't something, if there was something abnormal that was happening in my herd, which, knock on wood, I don't think that was what we were dealing with. I think this was just a fluke. But I wanted to have a clean sample that I could send to a university to get tested for things. And so they need placental tissue for that. They need the kit, you know, whatever you can get them, they want. But, you know, it's easiest if it's clean. So in this situation, I was able to basically take all that I could, put it directly on a wee wee pad, and stick it in the freezer to preserve it. And it's actually still in my freezer today because now it's just kind of the like, if it stays in the freezer, we won't have to deal with issues. But once we move, you know, it's kind of like bad juju to touch it. But with that, there was actually a second mummified kid as well. And that one was very much attached to the afterbirth. And so this is kind of where my learning experience came in. And I always thought, don't really mess with the afterbirth. It'll come out if there's something retained. You're going to have to give them antibiotics. Maybe you'll have to flush them. But for the most part, if you give them enough antibiotics, it'll kind of help them along through passing this afterbirth. Not that it's going to assist in the passing of the afterbirth, but it'll protect the doe as this afterbirth kind of starts to come out. If I don't think that's I'm explaining it right, but
No, it makes sense though.
but this I knew that there was like the second mummified kid. And so I was hoping and that she was going to pass her afterbirth, and she actually passed some of her afterbirth that night. But then the next morning, there was still this portion of her afterbirth that was there, and it contained this kind of, I almost want to say it was like a gizzard-esque sack of this second mummified kid. And so I
Gross.
called my vet and asked what to do. And so the conversation we had, which I had never really had this conversation before, but was really interesting to me and really helped me learn, was what color is the question he asked me was, what color is the afterbirth and how does the afterbirth look? And his idea, because you don't pull afterbirth because you're scared it's going to cause a bleed, ultimately, is why you don't pull it if it's hanging from the dough. But he told me that was only if it's healthy afterbirth, that if it looks like there's blood and it's kind of fresh. But when it's more of this gross, nasty stuff, you can pull it because that's ultimately dead tissue and you don't have as much of a risk and it's safer for the dough for it to come out. So then I was able to pull it out and get rid of it and start the dough on an extensive round of antibiotics just to make sure that everything was good. But it was really helpful to learn that you can, there are differences in afterbirth and how it all kind of looks. And so you can, I became a little bit more comfortable in recognizing that and realizing that things you can manipulate the afterbirth if you need to, if it is that correct, unhealthy afterbirth, and you can try and get that out.
That had to be crazy.
I just like
Gross.
it. So it was, I was expecting, so I saw when the mummified kid was coming out, I saw the rotten placenta. And I think I was very concerned. And this isn't the first mummified kid I've had. This isn't the first stillborn kid I've had. Like, this isn't the first like tiny thing that I've pulled out of a dough. But this is the first time that I saw that like rotted placenta. And it just goes to show you how powerful like those amniotic sacs are in keeping one healthy baby versus these other ones that are just not doing well and are decaying inside the dough. But I saw the rotten like placenta coming out and the fluids, and I was just scared that all of a sudden I was just going to be hit with a smell. And I was just waiting for that and then trying to make sure I was getting this mummified kid out without it breaking apart. I mean, I made faces. There was definitely faces made, but it was more of like the what ifs and going on inside my brain than the actual like doing, because ultimately I knew on both, like once I was given clear instructions on how to help this doe with that second one, I knew what I had to do and I was willing to do it, but it was the what ifs, especially for removing the first mummified kid, that just kind of freaked me out. But you know, these things happen.
So, can we talk about our living kid crop real quick before
Okay.
we kind of wind down, because we're close to an hour already, which is amazing for us. how are you liking your kid crop? And I ask this because I have majority of my kids are from my buck that I got just bucks from last year. And bucks tend to be very masculine and pretty as kids. At least the last couple of years, that's what I've found. So this year, now that I've got more does and they're from my new buck, like I'm like, these are amazing, but it took a while for me to get that way. As you know, Danielle, I went through all of the feelings.
You certainly did.
I hated them when they were first born. First of all, I had two that were tiny, both singles. One is still tiny, she's small, but she is by far the prettiest kid that I've possibly ever bred. But it's like when they were first unfolding, I was like, oh, they're terrible, they're disgusting, they're hip high, they're lanky, their front ends are narrow. They needed to unfold, and then they unfold, and I take pictures of them at anywhere from 10 days old to a week old yesterday, and I'm looking at them. And I'm like, holy cow, like these kids are good. Like these aren't terrible kids. They will be fine. You know, are all of them home runs? Probably not. Are they better than what I've been breeding for the last couple of years? Probably. So I'm liking them. I like my kid crop. I'm liking what Ozzy has thrown. I, of course, like what Voss gave me with the only breeding. He gave me a doe kid and two buck kids that are going to go as wethers, and somebody can enjoy them. But the doe kids
Avast daughter, who it just she's pretty, she'll do fine. She'll probably earn her dry lake easily, and she'll be fine. So I'm liking mine. I like what's happening on my farm. How are you liking your kids? Because you got maybe not as many kids on the ground now you do, but you've got a nice little smorgasbord to look at. How are you liking them?
I have to say, I'm very happy with what I'm seeing in that kid crop. I did a lot of repeat breedings with what, actually, for three of the four, we're not counting the fifth, whose kids are still drying off, would be the best way to put it. But three of those four does were repeat breedings because I liked what I had in my barn or what I saw from them last year and wanted to do that breeding again. So I can't say I was surprised with what they looked like, but I am enjoying seeing the consistency once again that we are getting from those crosses and the length we're seeing, the bone is real. I just really admire the substance of bone we're seeing on some of these kids. But I was really excited about my AI breeding that I did because, first of all, she's the cutest thing going, but and super flashy. But I used semen that was older from animals, from an animal that wasn't around when I was around. I didn't really even see kids of his recently. Was going more off of gut feeling and looking at what was available in the apgenetic genetic sphere. But even that was more of a gut feeling and a hope. And so I was really excited to kind of see how they mesh together. And so far, I think they're meshing well, and doing what I was hoping would kind of come from that breeding. So it'll be interesting to watch her grow up because I don't have the kids from last year to say, oh yeah, they're following suit or not
Yeah.
with. But then I'm going to have going forward a lot of similar but different kids on the ground because it worked out that most of these animals were bred to the one buck and some of them were repeats again, but then others were does that maybe I haven't bred them to him, but I bred their sister or their dam or their daughter or their daughter, whatever it was. So it'll be interesting to see that, but I kind of feel like I cheated because I have a whole pen of dry yearlings that were from him and got the consistency there, and I'm seeing the consistency again. So I'm happy. I don't necessarily know if I was shocked or anything like that, but very happy with the kids. And it's causing some issues because I'm seeing these kids and I'm seeing these yearlings and trying to figure out how to really make space for them in my barn and, dealing with that. But that's a whole nother day, a whole nother topic to discuss.
I don't know if you noticed, Danielle, because I sent you the four doughlings that I took pictures of. But man, the consistency between three of them that have the same sire is insane. I was like, holy cow, like you can totally tell. And I also want to add, Danielle, that I just sent you a text message. You may have received it by now. Do you see what I see on this kid?
Long ears.
Long ears. I tell you what, Jem with her buck kids, she's the stingiest thing with these buck kids. That's why I haven't registered a single one of them. She's a 90 doe, but her buck kids are 40s, right? Just kidding, but I just don't like them. They're either super light or they have donkey ears. The Nubian side comes through. I mean, that looks like I bred an Oberhasli to a Nubian.
The ears are pretty long. It's funny how that little bit of new man shines through. I
Oh, well,
know
the
it's
daughter's
true.
got quite the Roman nose popping up today, I noticed, so
Uh-oh.
it's okay. She's an experimental. She can
Well.
have a Roman nose. It's fine. Yeah. I also want to add real quick before we're going to talk about like show season and getting ready for Nationals, which we totally don't have our group chat going already for that. But planning is happening for Nationals, folks. When did Dine get so expensive by the gallon, Daniel?
I don't know, but I can't say I've been keeping consistent track of what the cost of dine is, so I'm useless here on this one.
So a gallon of dine, let's go to good old Google. I want to make sure that I got the price correct. Oh, let's make sure we put it for livestock, not for dogs. Even though they had dine for dogs. Okay. 80 bucks for a gallon of dine.
It's actually cheaper to get it at the half gallon from the same source. Like buy 2 half gallons.
Yeah, it's $30 for a half gallon.
Yes.
Like, when did this happen? It used to be so cheap. It's basically sugar water.
I don't
Ridiculous.
know. I
It's not
can't,
really sugar
unfortunately, I
water.
can't say I've been keeping up with the price. Like I said, I haven't been, plotting the plastic. The price of dying and tracking it, so
I just, I guess, sure, I can go to McDonald's and get myself a really fatty hamburger for $8, but I gotta pay $80 for some dine. Folks, if you have a distributor out there that gets it somewhat cheaper, I'm like the cheapest guy ever. Otherwise, I'm just gonna have to pay $80 for dine. Hopefully, Tierney's still not listening.
all of a sudden, she's going to see the 3 bottles coming in and be like, what the heck? But okay, so I'm just looking at the ingredients. And like, I do understand dine is a good thing and it does work, but it's basically like soybean oil and sugar and water. So. Is there something else out there you can be using if.
Yeah, I could get rice bran oil or whatever it's called. I could get other things. I have yet to, so this is for Jem, okay? Because she, in her quest to feel better, has still been pretty peckish when it comes to grain. So I'll probably end up getting it for her, and she won't like it. But my fat lard goat, that doesn't need any, she'll like eat the leftovers and be like, this is delicious." It's just the way it'll work. But there's other stuff out there, especially because obviously there's the show stock world has all this stuff, that you can use. I just haven't really looked into it. Dine has always been there and has consistently been around. So that's why I just kind of go to that. Even back in the day when we used it with cows. But yeah, I'm just gonna have to look into it.
But
And maybe.
also, so I'm like looking at the like label sheet. First of all, you're only supposed to give like, where are we, goats? At max 3 tablespoons 3 times a day.
Right.
So you're most likely not feeding her dine 3 times a day. So you're giving her 6 tablespoons a day. That's a lot in a gallon for if you're doing it by the tablespoon. The other thing is, yeah, I'm looking at these ingredients and I know, yes, it works, but a lot of it is just kind of filler or can be supplemented in different ways. So I don't know. I think doing a little research can
Would it be
find something.
cheaper to feed her dine, or would it be cheaper to go to the gas station, pick up some Doritos, nacho Doritos, and feed her those and get her just
Well, I don't think that's how it
as
works, but I think you're what you're trying to get this to do is not what Doritos are going to do, but
It did it to me.
didn't even touch that one. I'm gonna move on and say, y'all, this has been ringside.
We should probably wrap up. Danielle, this has been a fun episode. I'm glad that we got to think through our kidding woes, because honestly, it did make me think and look up some things as we were discussing. And yeah, it's I'll see how it treats me for the rest of kidding season. But if people wanted to find us on the old interwebs, where can they do that?
Well, you can find us at dairygoatpodcast.com. We are on Facebook. If you search Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast, you can find us on Instagram by looking up Ringside Podcast. And we are on TikTok as well. Just do a quick search for Ringside Podcast. You'll find us there as well. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to like, follow, leave us a review. We appreciate it.
Well, everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
Where are they? We'll catch you on the next one.
Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.